First of all, thank you very much for showing up on the second day, first thing in the morning. I realize most of you have been partying. I've been doing it as well, so I'm quite impressed, actually. There's so many people so early in the morning. As you can see, although you thought you came to see my presentation, actually I came to see you. This is actually what's happening today. So I'm gonna show you, well, you'll see why we have an IP camera. It's related to the topic of the presentation, of course. Okay, so let's start. So first of all, my name is Adrian Pastor, or PACVAC. I do research at GNU Citizen, where I publish most of the stuff I research. So just very quickly overview, this is not marketing. I just want to, you know, say a bit of about what we do. So, you know, if you want to check out some of our research projects, you can do it. So we do research. We do a lot of, you know, non-commercial research, which means that we do it for fun. We publish everything that we find. And then also because we have to pay the bills, obviously, we also do some private research for companies. We have also a penetration testing team, or Tiger team, which means, as you know, there's a few people involved on the security assessment. And as far as we know, we're the only active Tiger team in the UK at this moment. Anyways, we've grown quite a lot lately. We try to expand, come up with new ideas, we experiment. It takes trying, you know. You have to try a lot of different ideas to see if they actually work. So this is what we try to do, you know. Probably the latest project is House of Hackers, which is kind of like a social and a networking site for hackers, security professionals. This is quite a cool crowd. There's a lot of events also there being discussed. There's also a possibility, some of the members are discussing the possibility of creating an event, starting an event in London as well. So it'd be quite cool if it actually worked out. And yeah, that's the .com domain. That's a commercial site, but as you can see, most of the stuff we do is actually non-profit. Okay, so what am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about how to crack into devices. And I will tell you later why I called it And Beyond. What's the reason for that in the title? So, okay, first of all, what's the main focus of the research? I know there's a lot of people here, lots of, you know, security aware people. Most of you, I believe, will be familiar with some of the techniques. But in a nutshell, what we're discussing here is HTTP, you know, web vulnerabilities, universal plug and play, SNMP, and some Wi-Fi stuff. But as you can see, as you will see, the Wi-Fi stuff has nothing to do with abusing the protocol. It's actually, it has to do with predicting algorithms that are built into the embedded devices. There's links all over the slides, so if you want to learn more about any of the things that I'm talking about, I realize there's not enough time to cover everything as, you know, you would do it through training or in your own free time. So the slides are all full of a lot of links. A few months ago, we organized this router hacking contest, and as you can see, if you go to the website, you'll see that most of the compromises, most of the vulnerabilities that give you full router administrative access, they're all based on attacking the web management console, which is already telling you that in a way it's kind of the weakest link of embedded devices, because most embedded devices nowadays, they come with the web management consoles. And also, overall, the research covers some of the things will affect you as a user. You have a broadband connection. You know, maybe your ISP gave you a free home router. Maybe you bought it yourself. Some of the stuff will affect you as a user. Other stuff is more related to corporate environment. And, you know, second thing, the vulnerabilities discussed or techniques, it's for remote exploitation. I realized that there's a lot of cool things you can do once you're already in the LAN, but this is not really the focus of the presentation. Okay, so usually I know that you're supposed to give, well, you're not supposed to, but most people give the demos at the end. I'm gonna give it now at the very beginning. Hopefully it'll work. I realized that doing a demo, it's always a bit of a risk, you know. I personally really enjoy demos as an audience, so I'll try to give demos at presentations as well. So we're going to show this as if it was a magic trick. And then I'm going to ask you guys, I know there's some very good people among the audience, what do you think it happened after I show the demo? How do you think it works? Just to get some feedback from you. Hopefully it'll work. Actually, I had to change some things in the last minute, so I'm hoping that didn't scrap the demo. So this is just the shell script. We send the request to the camera. I'm not an administrator. I have already authenticated. So I'm administrator at this very moment. So I pretend to be the administrator. The requirement for the attack to work is that the administrator checks the logs. I realize that most administrators don't check the logs. So for this to work in real life, you have to somehow social engineer the administrator. Perhaps you want to flood the device with traffic. So eventually someone goes and tries to repair it and logs in as administrator and maybe checks the logs. How that happens in real life, that's up to you. So I'm just going to access the logs page. And we'll see now if it worked. There you go. Yeah, I just noticed, you see connection, we lost the connection. That's actually on purpose. The payload makes the camera reboot, so the logs are cleared. That way it's harder to detect the exploit. Because basically, if you didn't know, Axis IP cameras, once they reboot, all the logs are cleared. At least from the models I play with, that's the case. So after the administrator checks the logs, what happens is that the video page is replaced. Now, I realize this is a really silly animated GIF. In reality, what you want to do, or perhaps what's cool to do, is what they always show in the movies. You know, they replace the video stream with a video that's looping forever, and the video usually tries to look the same as the original. That way, if there's some sort of surveillance going on, you could bypass it. There's no way for the security guys to know that there's an intruder in the building. I'm just giving you an example. You could embed anything there. It could be Flash, you know, it's up to you. Whatever your browser understands, you can inject it because this is actually being rendered by your browser. So you could inject anything in there. So, okay, the web guys, anyone in the audience, do you know what happens or would you like to take a guess of how the video stream was replaced? Any volunteers? PDP is not an option. He knows this already. No one wants to volunteer? I can't show the code.
No, but this is what you put in. You open the console.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh yeah. I can do a less commands if you want for the.
You put some remote URL in
That's right. The GIF is actually, in this case, it's localhost for demo reasons, but it could be. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Actually, the camera does not need to have the administrator must be able to see the internet. Put it this way: if the administrator's browser can see the internet, then you can inject anything from the internet as well. By the way, that's a good point. That's a requirement for the attack to work. The assumption is that the administrator has online access. So, okay, yeah, we injected something. More specifically, anyone wants to guess how it worked?
I guess it would be cross-site.
Mm-hmm. That's right. There's these two persistent XSS involved and a request forgery in the same exploit. So when you see the page, all you do, you put a payload that changes. First of all, the logs page is vulnerable to persistent XSS, which means that you can inject any HTML. Once the administrator visits the page, all I'm doing is that I'm changing the title. If you notice, here there used to be a title on the bottom. Actually, what I did is that I replaced the title with HTML that injects this image. That's all it is. I'm just replacing the title. If you notice, there used to be a title there. So what I did is that I changed the settings of the title to inject your own video stream, image, you name it. That's very, very simple. But it's. I thought there's much more things you can do on the Axis IP cameras. You can steal the password file. This is old school passwd file, which means that you don't need a shadow file to crack the passwords. You can add new admin accounts. Also, what's interesting with Axis cameras that there's no separation between the operating system and the web console. So put it this way, if you add a new administrator account, or say root account, via the web console, you will see in the passwd file how literally there's been a new user added. This is completely talking to the OS, you know? It's very, very simple device, as you can see. Anyways, let's continue. All right. Okay, so it's very quickly, what I'm trying to transmit here is that when someone breaks into a device, even if you think, you know, no one cares about the device, maybe it's an HP printer, you know, if you really think about it, there are ways to take this attack further, you know, and then you could actually have a case in which, you know, it's actually serious enough for the company to care about locking down the embedded devices. But we still have this mindset of not caring so much about these miscellaneous devices. So one of the possibilities, and you'll see that it's more simple than, you know, uploading a new firmware, for instance. You don't need to do that sometimes. One of the possibilities, obviously, if you have an embedded device and it's sitting on the public net block and that device is not properly segmented, obviously now you have the possibility to probe the LAN from the internet. So you're using the device as a stepping stone. That's one of the reasons why I like saying and beyond. From my experience, sometimes when you find this, you know, what I like to say, call miscellaneous devices, sometimes they're not usually taken into consideration as much when it comes to segmentation as, you know, usual, web servers, application servers, no DMZ. I'm not saying it never happens, of course it happens, but all I'm saying is that in the case of some types of embedded devices, it doesn't happen as much. They're not segmented as often. In the case of, this is more applied to, well, Axis IP cameras. I'm just giving you an example of why you don't need to get very, very technical, you know? Everybody always says, okay, if you compromise an embedded device, okay, you can upgrade the firmware with your own Trojan firmware, but that maybe takes a lot of time, especially if it's closed source. This is a very good example, in my opinion. Axis IP cameras, they come with a mesh, which is a minimalistic shell, so that means that after you compromise the camera, you enable Telnet, which is not enabled by default, but you can enable it, and then you can write a script to probe the internal network. What the script does is up to you. Maybe you're doing a ping sweep. Maybe you want to port your favorite web scanner, you know, to mesh. You can do it. It supports it. You can do a scripting from Telnet. It's not a problem. And also, the more superior Axis models, usually the video servers, they also have PHP support. So again, you can program your own tools, and you're not changing the firmware or anything. It's very, very simple stuff. In the case of home routers, port forwarding capabilities, it's just also it also applies to SOHOs and, all, of course, companies. If you compromise a gateway and it's not properly firewalled, you can potentially probe the internal network by doing port forwarding. But the idea is you can use features and functionalities that already exist in the device for you to probe the internal network. That's what I'm trying to say, in case I'm not really explaining myself well. This is just an example of a script written in mesh. Very simple, all it does, it brute forces URLs. Maybe you want to try to find administrative interfaces on the internal web service once you have compromised an Axis IP camera. This is an example, you can do that. There's some code missing, but all the code is online anyways. Also, password reuse. I really believe in this because in my penetration test, when I do security assessments, I see this work a lot. It's not just some tutorial that I'm reading online, yeah, people reuse passwords, or I talk to people and I see that people reuse passwords. I actually see this working in corporate environments. So for me, a very good example that I like to give is if you manage to get the password of an embedded device, even if the company does not care about that embedded device, if this password is a customized value, there's a chance that the same value, the same password is being used somewhere else because administrators reuse passwords, especially if it's a customized value, isn't it? If you see a default value, okay, probably it's pretty useless stuff what you got there. But if you see some weird looking string, what are the chances that the same password is being used in a different system that's internet facing? So as an attacker, in my opinion, what you want to do is enumerate all the servers that have login interfaces that could be, I don't care, SSH, FTP, web consoles, HTTP, basic authentication, you name it, and try the same credentials on every single system. Again, I'm giving an example of, you have there's a device no one cares about in the company, it's sitting on the internet-facing net block, and someone compromises it, gets the password, maybe from the config file, maybe by looking at the HTML source code. There's some very bad implementations that return the passwords as type equals password attributes in the HTML form. I know it sounds ridiculous, but actually these home routers that do that. So the point is, if you compromise it, you can get these many ways to get the passwords. And also, in the case, there's very few examples of this, but some SNMP implementations allow you to get admin passwords once you get read access. So if you find the read community string, sometimes it's actually possible to get a password. I'm not going to lie to you. It's not common, but there's been some examples published in the past. These are some examples. BT Voyager 2000 used by Sohos in the UK. It leaks in this case, it's the DSL credentials. For HP JDirect, there's been a few public examples of SNMP allowing you to get the giving away the admin password. It just hex encodes it, but hex encoding is the decodable, obviously, like any other type of encoding. So you can still get the admin password. And there's a huge number of HP printers on the internet at this moment. So I wonder how many printers right now out there owned by big companies are using customized admin passwords, and this same password is being used by other servers owned by the same company. That's what I'm wondering. That's the idea behind this. In the case of Zigzell Prestige routers, I'm not sure in Poland, is in some continental European countries, they're known. I think in Latin America and Spain as well, I believe Telefonica ships them, correct me if I'm wrong. In this case, the dynamic DNS credentials, they're leaked via SNMP. So of course, the assumption is that administrator has enabled dynamic DNS. If dynamic DNS is enabled, you can get the credentials from SNMP read access. Then you can go to dynamicdns.com and completely change the configuration. So the idea is that you change the configuration so the domain resolves to an IP address that returns a login page that looks exactly like the original Zigzell admin login page, and eventually you could get the password. This is just the same, really. Also, there's a lot of devices that come with ping diagnostic tools. So it's a very simple way. If you want to do some ping sweep, all you do is just wrap around that functionality. You can write a ping sweep in a few lines by using the common ping diagnostic tools that come in a lot of devices. And this is just an example of a ping sweep tool for Zigzell. Again, there's a ping diagnostic tool. You wrap around it. It's very simple stuff. This is just going back to dynamic DNS poisoning. In the case of Zigzell routers, there's a lot of ways to get the dynamic DNS credentials, not only through SNMP. You can also get them through the web console. And I'm giving very specific information and links. So it's most of the stuff in this presentation is based on things that have been published. Most of it, it's on GNU Citizen. And this is just an example of SNMP walk. And as you can see, well, it's supposed to be bold, but it's not very clear. Eventually, in the output, if you pay attention, you get the username and the password for the dynamic DNS account, which you can use to log in to dynamicdns.com. So yeah, this is the one of the ideas that I'm trying to get across in this presentation, is that sometimes if an embedded device that is not supposed to be that important for a company is compromised, you can actually, if you squeeze the information you got, you can actually take that attack further, you know? So maybe you cannot compromise an FTP server directly, but maybe you can compromise it by getting a customized password from an HP printer, and then the same credentials have been used for an FTP server. That's just an example. This is a very important vulnerability that was released last night. It's an old day. I thought I would include it in the presentation. Okay, it's not funny, fine. I just put a lot of random pictures from last night. It was quite fun last night anyway. I try to be funny. Anyways, some people are funny naturally. I'm not. I have to try. You know, it doesn't work like that. Either you're funny or you're not. You know. Vulnerability is it's a flaw in human beings. If you drink a lot, you end up hanging out with individuals such as this. You know, which is not really it's not good for your life. You know, you end up doing no good. Okay, these are like it's a summary of the vulnerabilities that we have found and techniques. Again, there's links. You know, probably the most interesting things, in my personal opinion, or perhaps because I've done a lot of classic web stuff. Cold jacking. There's a lot of embedded devices that have now VoIP functionality, so you can do a lot of cool things by talking to the web management console. You don't need to even speak SIP. Sorry, you can talk to the web management console and you can initiate phone calls. Of course, if you find the vulnerability. But the point is, there's already VoIP functionality on embedded devices that can be abused by HTTP. That's the idea. And anyways, we'll get through all this, including SNMP injection. We're going to discuss this further details. If you read one of the latest bullet points, Onion Routers via new internal client calls, a lot of people don't realize this. There was a research published a few years ago. As you know, UPnP allows you to set up port forwarding rules without a password. Okay, maybe that's not a big deal because you have a host level firewall on your laptop, so you don't care if someone can enable port forwarding to a port on your computer because it's being blocked maybe on your computer anyways. But what's interesting is that you can enable port forwarding from the NATed IP address of the router to another IP address and port that's located on the internet. So essentially, you can use your router as a proxy. Now, this research that was published a few years ago, it assumed that the attack is internally. If you know the target model that you're attacking, you can actually replicate the port forwarding request just with a web page using Flash or XML HTTP request function if you combine it with a cross-domain vulnerability such as cross-site scripting. The point is that you can actually, if you know what you're doing, you can set up exploit page, and when people visit it, you're essentially enabling a permanent port forwarding rule to say target.com. So now you could end up with, I don't know, thousands of routers that will allow you to proxy your connections and hide your IP address. And I find this very interesting because usually every time you read hacking literature, they always say, oh yeah, attackers gain root access to the target server, and then they use it as a way to hide their connections, you know, their IP address. This is a very simple way to do the same. You don't need to fully compromise the device. These are some of the tricks or techniques that I think are useful. Usually when you combine more than one vulnerability, then you can do very, very interesting things. So in this case, a lot of ISPs at this moment that provide broadband connections, at least the ones that know what they're doing is that they're disabling all WAN services. So if you port scan your home router, you will see nothing from the internet. So if you find the cross-site request forgery and authentication bypass, then what you can do, again, you can compromise the router by having the victim being any user in the LAN where the router is, visiting a page. Visits the page, sends the request to the router, changes settings. What do I mean by changing settings? Well, maybe you want to enable remote access with your own password. That's probably one of the things you want to do. And this is something that we found, I don't know how long ago, actually, a few months ago. It's been a while. For the BT Home Hub in the UK, it's quite a big deal. It's a very popular device. There was an authentication bypass. At first, we thought it was a Thomson SpeedTouch problem because it's actually based on that device. But I've been told that the authentication bypass would only work on the BT Home Hub. This has been fixed already, by the way. And it's just the URL fuzzing techniques. You just put weird characters after the URL, and all of a sudden, the web server doesn't ask you for a password. I don't know if this is a weak regex. I don't know exactly why this is happening, but what we found out is that you can bypass the authentication in a very simple way. And we provided a proof of concept exploit against NewCitizen. We try to make it a bit funny, you know. So the idea is, you know, someone somehow is socially engineered to visit the malicious website, then he is redirected to a Techno Viking YouTube video. I don't know if any of you knows Techno Viking. Anyways, this is just to distract the victim. But what's happening in the background is that the router is compromised. And if you actually, if you pay attention to the code, what it's doing is actually, if you see RAS in the URL, that's remote assistance. That's a feature that was being used by BT to remotely manage the routers in case you have technical difficulties. They disabled that feature, but actually they can still completely do anything to your device, which is it's beyond the scope of this presentation. But let's just say that there's still ways for BT to change things on your router because of automatic upgrades. So essentially, they still have remote administrative access to your router, even though remote assistance has been disabled. So this exploit simply enables it with your own password. The attacker then gets an email just by contacting this PHP script. So what it looked like from the attacker point of view, after he has somehow attracted victims, maybe by setting up a forum that is supposed to help BT Home Hub users. I think that's a very good way to attract victims. What a better way to attract victims that use a certain router than setting up a forum that's supposed to help give you technical help for that router. If you set up a BT Home Hub technical help forum, you know that pretty much most people that go there will have a BT Home Hub. So the attacker will start getting emails saying, IP address X has been compromised. The password is 123456 8. Have fun. That's the idea. This is the same example as what I showed in the Axis IP camera. If there's a web server, but it's password protected, so you're on the internet, you can talk to the HTTP server, but you can do nothing to it because it's password protected. That's what happened with the IP camera. If you can send a malformed HTTP request, which is logged in the logs page, there's still a way to compromise the device. Most people will tell you, well, there's a web server, but this password required, and you don't know how to bypass that. You don't know the password. In this case, this is a way to compromise the device if you find persistent accesses in the logs page. And if any of you does web application penetration test, there's a lot of management consoles products, commercial products that are perhaps not very known, but you see customers using it, and many of them have persistent accesses problems in the logs page, which is interesting because if that logs page is viewed, you know it's an administrator that is seeing it. And therefore, you can perform any administrative request because the payload is being run within the context of the current user. And this is just, we just gave a few demos back then when I published the paper. One of them steals the passwords file. The other one adds a new admin account. And the last one is the one that I showed before. It just changes the video stream. And this is basically this is what the attacker would get. I mean, most of the information theft that happens by XSS, all you do literally is use XML HTTP request function to scrape the page that contains the information that you find interesting. In this case, the information I find interesting is the password file, which is what gets sent to the attacker's site where it's logged. And this is another vulnerability we published today. Again, I put a bunch of random pictures from last night. Okay, another personal favorite. Obviously, if you can see the web interface from the internet and you don't have the password, obviously, if you find an authentication bypass bug, it's a game over. I know this is a very simple thing, but still, I still wanted to mention it because it's important. This one is a bit of a weird one. We also found this on the BT Home Hub. I haven't seen it often, but if you have a home router, say, again, we're going back to home router. I think it's a good example because most people here probably have broadband routers. If the web interface allows you to see certain pages without logging in, and one of these pages contains interesting information, and you find a cross-scripting on a page or URL that can also be seen without authenticating, what you can do is that you can scrape those pages and steal them without knowing the password or finding an authentication bypass. In the case of the BT Home Hub, there was some sensitive information that that wasn't protected with a password, such as the WP key and a few other things. So it was just an example of how you can steal sensitive information without having an authentication bypass or without having to know the password. It's a very specific example, to be honest with you. And again, this is the demo exploit. It's just the same story. Even if it looks like there's a lot of code, it's always using XML HTTP request to scrape the page that you want. Essentially, that's what it is. So yeah, we love researching the BT Home Hub because we like embedded devices, and BT Home Hubs are very, very popular in the UK. So we keep researching it and finding things all the time because we just like it a lot. This is a very, very cool example. That wasn't found by me. I have the credits there. Okay, for you know, the people in the audience that's familiar with Aruba mobility controller devices, it's in charge of the entire Wi-Fi network. If you compromise that device, you own the entire Wi-Fi network. There was a very, very interesting case of this specific model of Aruba mobility controller that allowed you to inject persistent XSS on the logins page by sending a malformed request to the screens directory, if I remember correctly. Anyways, that's a very simple POC. It just, you know, what will happen if you send that request is that as soon as the administrator goes to the login page, the alert box will pop up. Obviously, you don't want to do an alert box. You want to do something else. So personally, my favorite payload for XSS on the logins page is to overwrite the login form's action attribute. Why? Because that means that when the administrator clicks on login, the password is sent to your website. And I know it's very simple, but a lot of people don't realize that with JavaScript, you can rewrite DOM values, even though they're already been declared. Nothing stops you. If you do persistent XSS, you can rewrite anything you want, including the action attribute. So this exploit, it's very simple, okay? It's a persistent XSS on the logins page, but what we're saying is that you can compromise an entire Wi-Fi network by doing this. I hope that shows that you can actually do some very serious stuff sometimes. And this is more vulnerabilities from last night. Damn it, no one is laughing, man. I thought it'd be funny. I really tried. Anyways, yeah, love for authentication bypass bugs. Okay, this is very important. If you do a web application penetration test, it's not very trivial to find an authentication bypass. But when you go to embedded devices, you find things that it's a joke. You just can't believe. It's like when you do a word game, you know, for web hacking, and the first stage is an authentication bypass. Basically, all it is put the URL that would appear after you log in, you know? This is the kind of things you find sometimes on embedded devices, because the developers assume that you won't know, if you don't have the password, you won't know the admin URL after you log in. This is the assumption. Of course, we all know here that you can enumerate devices. So once you enumerate a device, you can go to Google and find the authentication bypass, copy and paste the URL, or maybe you want to find it yourself if it hasn't been published before. So this is what we like to call A2C attacks. There's a few examples. I will go through each of them. This is the most simple example. Again, so you have a web console, you log in, and then you will have different URLs that correspond to the different administrative menus. Sometimes, I know it sounds really stupid, but there are devices that allow you to bypass the authentication by doing that. I encourage you to try it on your router. So log in, right? Get a few URLs from the administrative menu, log out, make sure that you clear the passwords from your browser, and then copy and paste the URL, and just check if you can actually see what's after that, if you can bypass the authentication. This example is more twisted. I couldn't believe it worked. This was quite funny. So check this out. So you get the router, right? And as usual, we have the a button that allows you to save the config file, like most embedded devices, right? It's very handy. You back up the config file. In case you screw up, then you can go back to the previous settings. So now, if you, by default, the request was a GET request, request that URL shown down there. If you change the method from GET to POST, all of a sudden, the embedded device doesn't want a password, doesn't care. Again, it's a very, 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 it's very primitive stuff. You just don't think it works, but you find these kind of things. And again, I have the links, it's all documented. This is probably one of my favorites, because a lot of people fail to test this in embedded devices. Okay, I'm gonna try to explain it, see if I get the idea across. So you have the embedded device web management console, right? Now you try copying and pasting the URLs of the admin menu, and it doesn't work. You need a password. So you think, OK, I can't do anything. Now, usually, when you have a form on a, after you click on one of the menus, you will have a form that allows you to change settings. Maybe you add a new admin account. Maybe you want to change the password. Maybe you increase the security settings. Now, that form usually, obviously, what it does is that it changes, it submits parameters to a certain CGI script. If that CGI script is not password protected, who cares if you cannot see that form, if you can just change the settings? So what we're saying is, you know, go to the form, make a change, capture the HTTP request, typically a POST request, then replay that POST request without authentication of any kind. I personally like using the curl tool. It's quite handy for that. So I make sure that nothing is being sent regarding authentication. I have control over the HTTP traffic. And there's been a few examples in the public. Again, call-jacking. In this particular case, what will happen, again, you visit a page, and this is how what it looks like. So you have your VoIP phone that comes with the BT Home Hub if you have signed up for the VoIP service. And you get a phone call, right? Now, that number that you get on the LCD screen, it looks like someone is calling you, but actually you're calling that number. So what I'm saying is that if you visit my page, it looks like the Vatican is calling you, but you're actually calling the Vatican, you know? I'm just giving you an example. You can do that. And you pay for the bills, of course. This is just one example. And again, this is all done by speaking HTTP. We're not concerned about SIP. We're only using HTTP. Why? Because the Web Management Console is a wrapper for the SIP functionality. I don't care about SIP. I speak HTTP, and the embedded device does the job for me. Again, we keep researching it. Again, we like it. Mario from Germany, also part of the GNU Citizen team, he found some interesting stuff on SNOM IP phones, very popular in Germany. My favorite vulnerability that he found, again, it's kind of like a call-jacking attack, but it's actually, I like it better than the one I found in the BT Home Hub. The reason for that, this one is very dangerous. Say that you visit the page. When the call is initiated, you don't get any warning. In the case of the BT Home Hub, it will look like an incoming call. In this case, if you're exploited successfully, your VoIP phone has been picked up, put it this way, even though you never pressed the button, okay? So you visit a page, and there's already a conversation established, so someone is listening to you. If the IP phone is directly connected to the internet, then you don't need the user to visit a page. You just talk to the web server directly, you know? So somewhere in some German office, you hear some lady talking, you know, and it's you establish a connection, you know, just by talking to the HTTP server of the IP phone. I find this very interesting personally. And we're talking about eavesdropping, which is interesting. So yeah, more research stuff. I personally like the idea of combining different protocols to compose an exploit. And this is something that I thought it's quite cool. So if you pay attention to embedded devices web consoles, there's usually three parameters that are printed at some point on the web pages. One of them is the system name, the other one is the system location, and the other one is the system the contact name. So that would be the administrator. Now, you can manipulate all these fields via SNMP. But you need SNMP, write community string. Now, I know a lot of you are probably thinking, what the hell, man, if you already gain SNMP write access, it's game over. Well, theoretically, yes, it's game over. But in reality, if you test the devices with SNMP write community strings, depending on the implementation, sometimes you can only change certain settings. So it might be the case which you can change some settings via SNMP, but you're restricted to perhaps doing a denial of service at its best. But maybe you don't want a denial of service. You want to compromise the device. You want to get the admin password. So then this is quite handy, because then you can set payloads via SNMP, which are then printed on the web console. So again, you could, I don't know, do a phishing attack, or maybe you want to forge an administrative request to add an account of your choice. We're combining two different protocols to ultimately launch a web exploit. This is very interesting. Sometimes we get also people contributing with us, GNU Citizen. And I will discuss now in more details. But what happens is, I'm not sure in the case of Poland, but you start seeing more devices that come with encryption enabled by default. So theoretically, this is really cool because that means that my grandma doesn't have to care about enabling encryption. It's already enabled by default. And if she needs to know the key, she checks the sticker on the router. And actually, that could be already too complicated for my grandma. But anyways, it simplifies things. That's the point. If you don't know the key, you can always check the sticker. So the idea is, by default, the ISP ships secure routers. That's the marketing line, of course. So what happens is, there's already been at least four public examples, one of them in Ireland, the other one in France, UK. Sorry, I forgot about the other one. But there's already been a few examples in which these keys, be it WEP or WPA, they can be predicted based on our public knowledge, public data, like SSID or MAC address, which everyone can get, as we know. So the idea is that instead of using conventional tracking methods, you can simply break into the wireless network by running a tool that already knows the algorithm used by the device. And I personally think that because encryption is enabled by default, it's much less likely that someone will change it because it's supposed to be secure by default. And what's funny is that we get a lot of emails from people from the UK that have been in trouble with the law, and they're saying that they never did anything wrong. I don't know if it's true or not, but they're kind of like, I mean, we cannot help them with this, but it appears that some people's routers are being used for things that are not meant to happen, you know, like people are using their wireless connections, even though there's encryption enabled, you know. BT said that they're aware of this problem, but the truth is there was nothing specific in the public domain that tells you, hey, by the way, anyone can get your key. So basically it's like providing no encryption, you know. Yeah, it comes with encryption, but anyone can get the key. There was no information like this on the BT website, although they said that they're aware of this problem. So this was Kevin Devin's work. He contributed with us. I hope I pronounced his name correctly. And the idea is, in this case, actually what we can do in this case is obtain the WP or WPA key based on the serial number. But in the case of the BT Home Hub, what happens is that obviously you don't know the serial number, but it turns out that if you compute all the possible serial numbers and then you match the corresponding SSID to the target one, eventually what you come up with is a list of about 80 keys that are the possible keys. One of those 80 keys will be the correct one. It takes about 2 minutes with the bash script to go through each of them. Okay, this is some new stuff that I added. So the current state of the BT Home Hub security, again, you know, we like researching this because it's popular in the UK. Wi-Fi wise, first of all, it comes with WP encryption, 40 bits by default. We know that anyone can crack this using Backtrack and the right USB adapter, or, you know, Wi-Fi adapter in general. If you have the right hardware and you're using the right tools, you can crack this, provided that it's already traffic in the network. You can also break into it by using the method that we discussed, which is based on predicting the key by feeding your tool the SSID. Now, once you're inside the network, say that you want to compromise the router as well. Maybe the attacker doesn't only want free internet. Maybe the attacker also wants to manipulate your router settings to maybe hijack your traffic. That's up to the attacker. Now, BT, before, a few months ago, the default admin password was admin. So that's, we all know it's a very common problem on home routers, you know, default passwords. Only we geeks change the admin password. So it's quite a problem. They did something very clever with the latest firmware upgrade, which happens automatically. Now all the routers have a password that is customized, it's specific to that router. And that's quite cool because that means that now you can, in theory at least, you cannot predict the password. It's the same password. The password will never be the same with different routers. For me, I think this is quite cool because first of all, it allows you to, it makes harder to predict the password. Second of all, it disables or cancels cross-site request forgeries unless you find an authentication bypass, of course. But it turns out that you can also get that password. So after you break into the BT Home Hub wireless network, there's a protocol spoken by the Home Hub, which we will publish soon. And all you do, you literally send one request, and it gives you the password back without you knowing the password. One request. It'll be published on Monday, probably. It's funny. Actually, it's nothing wrong with the protocol. It's the way BT implemented the new customized password. It's based on information that you can't get via this protocol, put it this way. The protocol is not designed to give you, the protocol doesn't know that's a password. The protocol knows that this is a setting, a parameter within the device. But it turns out that the value of that parameter is actually the customized password. So in, you know, you have the password, basically. And this is more, more vulnerabilities. Anyways. Okay. Okay, for me, researching the home routers is not only about, oh, you know, we're so cool, we found the vulnerability. It's not so much about that, okay? There's very interesting and dodgy things happening by ISPs now. I'm sure in Poland you're getting the same. I've already talked to quite a few people that have knowledge of these things. All these home routers that are shipped, or most of the home routers that are shipped by ISPs, they have very customized settings. And what they're doing, you can believe me or not, but what many of these ISPs are doing is this is basically spyware, okay? Who gives a crap if you have anti-spyware on your laptop? If the router gets all your traffic, which it does because it's your gateway, it can steal any traffic. It can send the traffic for statistics, you know, for customer behavior analytics, whatever the hell you want to call it. I call it spyware. They could parse any data that goes in the clear. They could parse cookies. Most cookies travel in the clear. Essentially, it's a session hijack. If the website is crappy, the password will travel in the clear. There might be other clear text protocols as well, FTP, you name it, POP3, whatever it is. The point is, how much are you trusting a home router that's provided for free by your ISP? How much are you trusting it? Do you really know what happens between your router and the internet? Because if you actually check online, there's actually a lot of people that are questioning this lately, but it turns out that it's not so trivial to sniff it, you know? I mean, as far as I know, this is not a cheap way. Again, I don't know if there is, but if there is a way, tell me. This is not a cheap way to sniff ADSL. To sniff that traffic. There's some toys online. I thought I mentioned it, probably the next slide. There's some toys that you can buy that are actually used by the engineers that make these routers, and that you can buy if you have good cash, you know? And this device will allow you to basically sniff all the DSL traffic, and then you can learn about the secrets. What is the home router doing? You know, is it sending anything to a place it's not supposed to? You know, any sort of a call home activity? What's happening, you know? If there's automatic firmware upgrades, how do they work? Once you learn how it works, can you manipulate them by yourself? Can you change settings once you learn how it works? So for me, in the research for the BT Home Hub, this is the next step. It's to understand what's happening between my router and the internet. I want to know what information is being stolen about myself. I want to know how the firmware upgrades work. This is what I want to learn. And maybe I can get one of those devices. I don't know. But I gave some links. There's a couple of links there. Again, we'll put the slides online. And that's the picture of one of these devices. It sits between your router and your telephone jack, basically. And it will allow you to debug all the information. It's actually used by the engineers that designed the firmware upgrade protocols and so on. And this is, I like to put a bit of politics in my slides sometimes, because it's not all about only being technical, you know? Sometimes it's about, I mean, you want to make sense out of your work, you know? Like, okay, question things, you know? What's happening in the industry, you know? Is anyone here familiar with the phone service, FON? Phone service? La Foneda? Okay, so BT was really pushing to make this service big in the UK. So what they did is quite clever. Instead of having to buy the Foneda device, what they did is that actually the BT Home Hub now natively supports phone. So if you opt in, you can use phone, you provide phone access, and then you get phone access from other people, and you don't need to buy any additional device. So somehow, Schneier, one of the biggest opinion makers in the industry, who of course works for BT, somehow a few months after the phone service came out, he wrote an article that was quite big in Wired saying that he does not use any sort of encryption in his wireless network. We know there's concerns in the industry about unprotected wireless networks. And it's not only about free internet. We're talking about someone using your wireless network to do illegal stuff. getting pedophile content, attacking target servers, things that I don't want people to do to my network. Somehow Schneier said that the wireless is, his wireless is wide open, and we know that he's such a big icon and he is such a big opinion maker. And all I'm just wondering if it has anything to do with the phone service. Anyways, just something to think about. Thank you very much for showing up. I'm really impressed there was such a good turn up, especially on the second day. I hope you find that interesting. I realize maybe I didn't explain some things correctly. Maybe there's too much content, but you can drop me an email. I can give you my business card. You can contact us on GNU Citizen. Thank you very much for your time. I hope you found it interesting. Any questions? Don't be shy. It's very informal. Just ask me anything. Or you can come now personally and talk to me if you want. No? Come on, there must be something you want to know. Where's the... I'm not sure if it's working, actually. Hello? Yeah.
This is kind of a question to people here and to you, too. And by the way, thanks. That was really good thinking to get us...
Thank you.
In Poland, I think these access cameras, there's a lot, just for people that are interested in playing with this, a lot of the municipalities, a lot of the gminas will have these. If you look on the internet, and there's even Google, there's a specific Google search for finding
yes,
them.
Yes, there is, yes.
In case anybody didn't know. But in Poland, I think it's kind of expensive to get such a camera, but the one that I know that I'm seeing a lot at the Computer Gilda in Warsaw is, it's made by EDI Max. I don't know if anybody has seen that or not, but it's called IC1500. It's a quite
popular. I need to write that down, actually.
Yeah, I would like to see something on that because there's some problems with it. It likes to lock up, and I'd like to kind of see if there's a way to hack it for a reason so we could fix it.
Yeah.
So if anybody's interested, find me if you're interested in doing anything with that. I've even got one publicly, so if somebody wants to play with it,
if you give me permission, just send me a document saying I authorize you to play with it.
Yeah, I'll do it.
I'm happy to do it.
Okay.
Actually, the first things I found on the Beating Home Hub was a donation. Someone gave me a home hub to play with. This is how I found it. So maybe in this case, we'll find something else too,
Yeah, and they're cheap. Here, I think it's like something, well, relatively cheap. A camera like this costs, I think, a few thousand zloty, but this EDI Max costs around 100. I think 150 zloty, so it's quite
this
affordable.
This one, if you go to eBay, it's good. 2100 and 2120. They're still widely used, but it's because it's relatively old already. If you go to eBay, you can buy it for very cheap. I don't remember how much I paid for it, but I recommend using Axis cameras a lot for research because it's open source, and the developer sites of Axis gives you so many tools for you to customize the camera. It's really powerful. So I really think they did a good job. So if you want to play with a device, I think Axis IP cameras is a good choice, personally, I think.
Thanks.
Sure.
Anybody else?
Well, kind of a comment for your information. In Poland, the main service provider, the Polish telecommunication, provides also such wireless boxes. They call it Live Box, and they also come with pre-configured web encryption and with the key provided on the box. So I also, you probably won't know, but I wonder whether it's possible to figure out those web keys.
I recommend you to check the links because some of these models, they usually wrapped as a different brand, but it's the same. So you might be surprised. Maybe the research is already out there, but no one has noticed. Hey, this tool works for this Polish router, because what this Kevin Devin, what he found was for an Irish router, but it turns out it's also used by AT&T in the US. So it could be the same in this case, maybe it's already out there and no one has made a comment in the public, Cool.
I think that it's true here. It's true because this is France Telecom router and Polish Telecom is part of France Telecom. And as I research, the brand of this live box is Sagem, and it's widely used in France Telecom companies. So I think it's true. But one interesting case for me, it was your question about trusting to ESP. And of course, this automatic update is quite important case. But of course, when ISP wants to analyze traffic, it can be done to the other side, from the other side, yeah? Mm-hmm. When this other point, a router is our point, and there must be another point at hosting. And we can't even imagine what device are this remote point. So it's ISP always has possibility to analyze, and this is used for security government reasons.
Oh yeah, I mean, to me it's like, what the hell, man? Everyone is talking about spyware on your desktop computers, but how come there's not so much noise about your home router stealing your traffic, you know? I mean, what are you gonna do about that? Obviously the obvious solution is not to use it, but we know that if there's a big telecommunications provider, there's gonna be a few million using that router. My mom is not gonna care about not using that router, you know?
Wide exploits of routers in Mexico for...
Oh yeah, that was big. They targeted one of the most popular banking...
Beautiful.
Yeah, I read your blog post, I think, Ispasek, did you write about it? Yours?
Yeah.
One of you guys wrote a post. Actually, I talked about this post on Genu Citizen once. It's a very good post. Yeah, actually, for people that think that request forgeries on routers is just a geek thing that it's never going to happen in real life for profit, there was a massive attack on the most popular home router in Mexico, and the request forgery attack, if I remember correctly, was changing the DNS settings. So when you go to bank.com, it's resolving to a different IP address, which is a fake website, of course. So it was like mass phishing, you know? So for some of you that might think, okay, this is, yeah, perhaps won't happen all the time, but this already been real examples of exploitation in the wild. So it's not just some mental masturbation anymore, you know? Some researcher like, oh yeah, this is so cool, man, I can't own it, you know? It's actually been used by criminals.
Do you have any knowledge about using this information for some people to do nasty things, like, an example, phishing bank accounts? Because you told that this router is very popular in United Kingdom. So do you have knowledge that someone used these vulnerabilities to do some...
We're getting emails from people saying, hey, I've been accused of... I don't know if it's bullshit or not. I mean, maybe it's the case, but people basically say, hey, my router, you know, I've been reported to do certain things, and this is not my traffic. This is someone else, you know, connected to my wireless. I don't have control over this. I don't know if it's related or not, but I mean, wireless-wise, there's about 3 million home routers, BT Home Hub routers, in the UK, and they're all trivially breakable. I mean, you can break into the wireless and you can compromise the device by just following what's on these slides. But that's just, I don't know, man, there's no... For me, I feel that people should pay more attention to this, but I guess I'm the only one that...
Do you have any official contact with the British Telecom?
Sorry?
Do you have any official contact with the British Telecom? Did you tell them about these vulnerabilities?
Yeah.
What was their reaction?
It's very difficult situation. I mean, they don't answer. It's a bit weird.
Because
it's
they have some security team.
No, I know
they should
have
be aware of that.
No, I know they have very good people. I know this, but unfortunately, the management of the company, you know, it's...
It doesn't care.
You know, anyway. So, yeah, cool. Thank you so much, guys.